Match of my life. Life stories and greatest games.
Radio City Talk.
So today's Match of My Life guest won a whole host of medals. 357 appearances with Everton, 97 goals, FA Cups, European Cup Winners' Cups. Even had a spell at Liverpool at the start of it all. So that's where we'll begin the journey. How did you end up at Liverpool, Kev?
I was playing for my local team, Hereford United. That's where I was brought up. Made my debut for Hereford when I was 16. Got into the first team. The manager at the time was John Sillett, who went on to manage Coventry when they won the FA Cup. He was a great help to me in my early days. Believed in me and, as I say, gave me my opportunity. Unbeknown to me, Liverpool were watching me. They always look for young players coming through. And at the end of the season, a mate of mine got two tickets for the European Cup final at Wembley, Liverpool, Bruges. Went along as a football supporter, not as a Liverpool supporter, just to go, you know, you don't get the opportunity very often. So I saw Kenny Dalglish score the winning goal. More importantly, I saw the best midfield in Europe at that time, Ray Kennedy, Jimmy Case, Terry McDermott, Graeme Souness. And then, as I say, I was back home at my parents' pub in Hereford, and I got a phone call off the chairman, Peter Hill, and he said he was at Liverpool. They'd accepted a £100,000 bid and to go and sign. There was no agents or advisors in those days. I just went up, travelled up with my mum and dad. But all the time I travelled up, I was thinking, I don't really want to sign. I had confidence in my ability, but as I say, I've just seen the best midfield in Europe, so I knew it was going to be a tough call to break in. And they were such a good team in that era that they never really got injured. They were that much better than the other teams that they weren't really having to put themselves at risk through injury. Arrived at Anfield, had a tour, had a photo.
Who greeted you? Was it Bob Paisley?
Bob Paisley was the manager, yes. So I had a tour around Anfield, and it was like, I didn't want to sign. They offered me a 4-year contract, and it was never about money, the issue or anything like that. It was just, I wanted to play week in, week out. The chairman of Hereford realised that I didn't want to sign, and he pulled me to one side and just said that, you know, the £100,000, if it was a lot of money then, and if I didn't sign, Hereford United might go bust. So he sort of put a little bit of a, not a gun to my head, but he sort of pointed me in the right direction.
It's a sizeable gun, that.
So I was loyalty, I signed, you know, and I look back 4 years, I only made 4 appearances, and I look back to when I signed my contract, Bob Paisley got up, shook my hand and said, congratulations and well done, Philip. He didn't even know my name, so the writing, I think, was on the wall then.
He hadn't scouted you then. Jeff Twentyman.
Jeff Twentyman was the
he had a keen eye for them, didn't he?
Indeed. So, but as I say, I had 4 years there. I learnt a lot. When you're training with great players day in, day out, it can only help you as a player. And I came when I eventually my contract went out and I signed for Everton. I went to Everton as a better player, having trained and played. And it was, you know, the same with Howard Kendall. He rang me and said, you know, do I want to come and sign for Everton? And I was in Digs in Anfield, and I used to go and watch Everton's midweek games. So I saw Sharpie make his debut, saw Adrian Heath come for 750,000. So I saw the team that Howard put together. So when he said, would I want to sign for Everton? And it was no hesitation.
As a young man, were Everton in any way in your heart when you're watching football? Did you have an allegiance to someone?
Yeah, I mean, when I was going to the games, you see the passion of the supporters. So I knew exactly what I was coming to with Everton. Yeah. I mean, when I was growing up, George Best and Bobby Charlton were my players
were
I looked
heroes,
to.
Right.
I was fortunate to play against George Best when he was finishing his career at Fulham. I came on as a young 16-year-old. Bobby Moore was on the same pitch. It was great to look back as a young player, and you've been on the same pitch as those legends.
There's not too many that have crossed the park, and obviously it raises a few eyebrows. For yourself at the time, did it feel at all problematic, or was it the fact that you literally hadn't made any dent in the Liverpool first team? It was quite an easy transition for you.
I knew I'd be under pressure, because if the Everton supporters would be thinking, well, if he's not good enough for Liverpool, why should he be good enough for us? So I knew I had to really hit the ground running.
They were sceptical, weren't they?
Yeah. But I knew I had to. I was fortunate. I had a real good first pre-season. Was as fit as I could be. Played in all the games. So when I made my debut and made my first initial games for Everton, I was playing well. So I scored in one of my early games against Tottenham at home, and I won the supporters over quite quickly. Really, so it was. I knew how important that was.
How would you compare and contrast the two managers then? So you spent a bit of time with Bob Paisley, but as you say, he was a uniquely different character. And then you head to a completely different character in Howard Kendall.
Yeah, I mean, both top managers. Obviously, I had all my success with Howard. He was a great man manager. He was one of Everton's best ever players, so he knew the game inside out. He was still great in training. He always joined in training, and he was still, you could see he was a top player. But he just, the way, you know, he dealt with the players that weren't in the team, it's easy to pick the team. But Howard's belief was he always picked his best team. So the likes of Kevin Richardson and Al Harper, they'd step in for either myself or a midfield player, play really well. But then when that player was fit, he'd put them back in. So he always had a belief. So I can only speak for myself. He gave me 100% confidence. Even if I wasn't performing well, not having a good game, he'd keep me on the pitch. He knew I could score a goal or create a goal. So to have a manager give you that so much confidence, then it really, it took all the fear away from me. I wasn't frightened about giving the ball away. I'd try things. I'd try long passes, knowing that I had the belief from the bench, and you know, I wasn't be looking over my shoulder.
That's worth its weight in gold, isn't it? When a manager's got that belief in you. And it's fascinating, if you look at your stats for the 82-83 season, you played more games than anyone else. So literally, you've stepped into the Everton side and cemented it straight away.
Yeah, as I mentioned before, it was vital for me, and I didn't know that stat, to be honest, Steve. But obviously, Howard is a big believer in his balance, you know, so we always wanted a left-sided player, which fortunately I was able to do. And, you know, it sort of, as I say, it helped me to win the crowd over. I know we went through a little bit of sticky patch, you know, in 83, 84, but it was, you know, playing regular football, homing in on your ability and really performing at the top level.
Yeah, you mentioned the sticky patch, the great revival in the Everton side. Did you look around the dressing room and think there's some brilliant players here? We really are at the start of a good journey.
Indeed. I mean, when you're training day in, day out at Belfield, it was a brilliant training ground. You know, it was like perfect for that era of football. But when you see the players training, Neville Southall, you know, you had to stick it right in the top corner or bottom corner to beat Nev. He was saving everything. Just right the way through the team, Trevor Stephen, he never gave the ball away in training. Reedy and Brace was competitive in Monday to Friday as they were in games. So you could see the, you know, the quality that was there, and it was just a case of it all falling into place, and Howard could see it, Colin Harvey could see the ability that was on the training pitch. So, you know, I think if he wasn't seeing that, then it would have been a little bit different. But obviously, it was only a matter of time before it was going to kick off.
So by the time the team had reached a Milk Cup final in 83-84, it was pretty evident what was going on at the football club. A game that you missed out on?
I played in the Milk Cup final, the first game we drew 0-0. The replay. No, I missed the replay because I ruptured my ankle ligaments in the final at Wembley. So that put me out for the season. So I missed the replay at Main Road and obviously the FA Cup. So it was like, it was great for the club. It was great for the team. But, it was part and parcel of the game, the injuries.
Yeah, you'd say that quite diplomatically, like it was just one of those things. But was it a significant moment for you and for the players when you reached that final against Liverpool and there's an all Merseyside affair there?
Indeed, yes. I mean, it's always, as a young player, you know, it's always, you don't know where your career's going to take you. But when you do get to the top level, then obviously the next stage is to win things, to get to finals and win them. So it was great for Everton. It was great for the city, for both teams to play in the first all Merseyside final.
Right. And of course, there was domination to come. We'll talk more with Kevin Sheedy in just a moment or two on his Match of My Life. Some brilliant stories to recount, including an incredible double take of a free kick, which he scores twice.
Radio City Talk.
One of the finest to ever wear the Everton shirt. My guest on Match of My Life today in Kevin Sheedy. And we're up to the all-conquering team of 84-85. Even Derek Mountfield was scoring lots of goals that season, probably courtesy of your crosses, Kev.
Yeah, I still remind him of that. I've probably stuck 10 of those goals on his head. But no, Derek was outstanding. You know, when we got free kicks, he was moved quicker than some of the strikers. You know, you just put the ball down, you'd make out you weren't looking, and you just look for a blue shirt to move and just put it in front of him. And he was prolific in those days. I mean, I don't know anybody else who's got that 14 goals. When you look back, when you win the league, you've got to have a certain amount of players scoring goals. You can't be just reliant upon one or two people. So we were fortunate. We had Derek, Trevor Stephen got into double figures. I got into double figures, Sharpie. So there was we were sharing goals around. So,
Hey, you were selfish. You liked a lot of assists as well as goals, didn't you? You liked to be on both sides of the fence. So you had all sorts of options when you're putting balls into the box. Graham Sharp, one of the greatest sort of jumpers. He, you know, elegantly could meet any ball with a header, couldn't he?
Well, it's just being on the same wavelength. I mean, I wasn't the quickest of player, but Sharpie knew if I got half a yard, the ball was coming in. So he was on the move. So if the ball was delivered with quality in front of him, he was great at getting across defenders or, you know, battling for them. Adrian Heath was a different type of player. You know, his movement was like he'd come short to go long to come short. So you could play one touch into him because we had a real good understanding. So that time, those two, Inchy and Sharpie, they were like a real potent strike force. You know, Sharpie was the old-fashioned type, get hold of it, help put people into play and then get on the end of things. Then when Inchy was out, Andy Gray, and with the size of Andy's forehead, you only have to put it in the box and he'd get his head on it. But no, he was a fearless player. You know, he'd get his head on things. And then the other season, we had Gary Lineker, totally different player again. You know, so we had a good few strikers in that era.
How did the arrival of Pat Van Den Hal affect or helped you yourself?
It helped me because he was an out and out defender. I mean, he was a real good defender in 1v1 situations. So, I let him mostly get on with the defending. And then he was right-footed mostly, so I got a lot more passes off him because he'd play his right foot out to me. But no, he was just another good signing that Howard made. You know, he played in a number of positions. He could play left-back, right-back, play centre-back for Wales. So, you know, he was a real accomplished defender.
Right, 84-85. Were you aware that there was a team that was going to challenge for the title? I think you get to November, you top in November, and on Boxing Day you go on a 28-match unbeaten run. Is it just one of those things that when you're in that cycle, you're just doing it week in, week out, the utter belief in yourselves as a squad?
I think it's just the confidence that you get. You know, you're looking around the dressing room before a game and depending on who we were playing, no disrespect to them, but if you needed sometimes to be 70% or 80%, obviously the better the teams. But when you're looking Neville Southall, Neville used to say to the defenders, if they're shooting from 20, 25 yards, don't block it. He said, I'll save it. It's the deflection will beat me, sort of thing, you know. And we just I think the game that stands out, the one for me when I thought, we've got a team now, when we beat Man United 5-0 at Goodison, we absolutely destroyed them. And they had a really good team. But we beat them 5-0 and they got out of jail with 5-0 because it could have been more. So when you
and two goals for yourself that day.
Two goals, yeah. A rear header. Gary Stephen crossed it from, and it was just inside the box. And as everyone knows, I wasn't great with my head. And I've just sort of gone towards it. And the next thing, it's just rocketed into Gary Belly's top right-hand corner. And I went down, had four stitches. And I later on found out it was Kevin Moran, who was a good mate of mine, was playing right-back. And he couldn't get to the ball. So his way of putting me off was to headbutt the back of my head. So he's headbutted me. It's gone right in the top corner. And Kevin got stretched off with concussion. I mean, he wasn't a dirty player. He was just a hard player. So I always say to Sharpie and Big Duncan, you know, no, you haven't scored from the edge of the box or the header. So that was a great performance. And I think after the game, you're looking and you're thinking, yeah, we've got a good team here.
It's one of the great Everton games, that though, isn't it?
I would think so. Yeah.
Even now, if people recollect on decades gone by, what clicked that day?
I think it was just total football. I think everyone just, it was no man of the match that day. Everybody put in a performance that we're capable of, and right from Gary Stevens, from the back players through midfield, we just cut them apart, sort of thing, you know. And they had Brian Robson, Kevin Moran, they had Jesper Olsen, Gordon Strachan, you know, so they had good players, sort of thing, but they couldn't live with us on that day.
Another hugely significant game, which was, I think it was only a week apart from that one, was the win at Anfield in the Merseyside derby, and Sharpie's goal, which is replayed often because it's just a fantastic goal, isn't it? But what are your memories of that day and what it meant to win at Anfield?
I think it's just an important turning point, and I think, you know, if you're going to win a derby game, that's the sort of goal you want to see. I mean, Sharpie, he'll never forget that goal. The supporters will never forget that goal. It was just, I think it summed up the way the players were playing with confidence. You know, he had the confidence just to turn and shoot a volley across the keeper. So I think it was just, that's the way things were going then. People weren't frightened to try things like that, and when you got the quality and ability that the players had, then things like that were happening all the time.
So, Kevin Sheedy, the league was clinched with five games to spare. Final gap between Everton and Liverpool was a massive 13 points. You've got 90 points yourself. You're feeling pretty invincible as a team. What are the memories of that first league title for yourself?
I think, again, it goes back to when you're a young lad. I started kicking the ball against my dad's pub wall all day. That was from the start of it. And then you don't know where your career is going to take you. Obviously, then, you know, when you get to the top level, as I said before, it's all about winning things then when you look back. So to win your first medal, the league never lies. The best team wins the league every season. We were by far the best team. As you say, the points tally, and just say just the amount of goals that we could score, the amount of goal chances we created. We had the best, a real great back four with Kevin Ratliff, who was the quickest defender in those days, so we could play high up the pitch. Any ball played over the top, Rats would just get on, sweep it up, and then if they did actually get through, Nev would just pull out a world-class save with his only touch of the game, probably.
But he was instrumental, wasn't he, in that season? And in fact, if you look at Everton play, was that the year he won the Player of the Year award? It might have been the year after, I don't know, but he was pretty much Player of the Year quite a few years, wasn't he, for some of his performances?
Yeah, he was unbeatable. I mean, going back to training sessions, you know, we'd have other keepers, and no disrespect to them, you didn't really have to put him right in the corner to score. But when Nev came in, you know, he'd put one right in the top corner, he'd get a little fingertip to it, tip it over the bar or tip it onto the bar. And some of the lads, if the shots weren't great, he wouldn't even bother saving them with his hands. He'd just use his chest. And he was probably at that time, he was the hardest working professional. He just loved it. He made himself a sandpit so that if it was, you know, rock hard, he could still train, he could still dive around. So he was incredible, really.
What an image that is. He made a sandpit so he could keep going. Your manager, well known for probably enjoying his celebrations. What did you do on the night that you won the title?
A long time ago. We certainly would have gone out and socialised. Yeah. You know, Howard was big on that, but it was at the right time.
How big? Was it always at the moment that suited him, or it wasn't all the time?
No, it wasn't all the time, no. I think it's a bit of a fallacy that. We did go out at the right times. We had a great camaraderie with the players. We all got on really well together. And, you know, that went on the pitch. I'm not saying that's the be-all and end-all, but certainly it helped. I was fortunate to be playing for the Republic of Ireland at the same era, and we had the same camaraderie in that, and it was a big part of being successful in that era. On the night we won the league, we'll have all gone out and really enjoyed ourselves.
How much was European success an important factor? And looking back on your career, obviously you were privileged enough to be in the European Cup Winners' Cup team and experienced a great night against Bayern Munich here. How much is that an important part of your life if you look at it now?
Well, it's massive when you look back and you finished your career, you look back at the great moments, the great nights that you had in football. And as you mentioned there, Bayern Munich, I mean, I've been fortunate to play in massive games. I played in the World Cup quarterfinal in Rome against Italy. But the atmosphere at Goodison Park that night, 55,000, maybe more there, it was just so electric. And when
you can sense it as a player straight away, can you?
Oh, yeah. When we got to the ground, you know, we couldn't get round the back by the Gladys Street. It was just rammed. You just knew from then it was going to be a special night. When you went out for the warm-up, it was just like really electric. And come kick-off time, the noise was deafening. But as I say, just before half-time, they scored. You could hear a pin drop. It was just total silence. Fortunately, the second half, we were kicking towards the Gladys Street. Howard wasn't a ranter or raver. He just said, just get at them from the start of the second half. He said, the Gladys Street will suck your goals in. And that's what they did. A long throw from Gary Stevens, which we never worked on. Howard was never... he just wanted you to go and play. So you wouldn't spend hours on the training ground working on set plays. He gave you the... You could see it, you could do it, just get on with it. So Gary Stevens put a long throw in. I think it was Andy Gray got on the end of the first one, scored. A few minutes later, exactly the same, another long throw. Sharpie got on the end of it. So from 1-0 down, we turned it around. And then the game opened up. It was end-to-end stuff. And it was going to be another goal. It was either going to be 3-1 or 2-all. And I remember getting the ball in the left-back position. And I was waiting for Andy Gray to make a run. And I've got 55,000 people shouting man on, sort of thing. So there's a little bit of pressure. But I played it through to Andy. And he released Trevor Stephen, who scored a great goal. And that's the loudest noise I've ever heard in the stadium when that third goal went in. It was unbelievable. It still puts
you can still hear it now, can
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah, indeed. And we knew they were a top team. They went on to win the Bundesliga that year. And I think, you know, the final was... we were strong favourites, but you still got to go and perform. So fortunately, we performed on the night.
So that's Rapid Vienna, but actually Bayern is the game that stands out to you.
Yeah, indeed, because, you know, when you look back and we weren't able to go into Europe again, you know, you look back at the team we had, we were more than capable of beating a team of Bayern Munich's ability over two legs. So that's the one regret as well, you know, that we weren't able to go for the European Cup.
Yeah, that you couldn't advance. Do you think you had a team that would have made a significant impact on that European Cup?
Indeed, and that's the biggest disappointment. If the team wasn't good enough, then, you know, you're playing it. But when you've got a team that was as good as ours, that would have had a great chance of winning it, then that is a real big regret.
Radio City Talk.
Match of my life. Life stories and greatest games.
Okay, Kevin Sheedy, my guest today on Match of My Life. Let's talk about your relationship with the FA Cup. what happened there, Kev? A man who reached how many finals?
Oh, three FA Cup finals, Milk Cup final, four, Cup Winners' Cup, five.
Right, you've strayed into Cup Winners' Cups. FA Cup, why was it so hard to get over the line? And actually, do you look back with a little bit of disappointment on the FA Cup opportunities that were missed?
Yeah, that's the one that got away from me. I was played in three of them, missed out in 84 through injury, as I said before, and then probably trying a bit too hard because all the other lads have won one. So I think, looking back, I was great going up to the quarterfinals, semi-finals, and then just for the finals, I just couldn't... I played well, but I couldn't quite get that goal or get that assist sort of thing. And you know, we came close in a few of those games. So it is, I do look back with a certain amount of regret, as Kevin Ratcliffe keeps telling me, you know, I've missed
out. Doesn't remind you of it, does he?
Of course he does every day, I think. So,
it's outrageous, isn't it?
No, but it's one of those. It's I've fortunate to have won other things, so it's it wasn't to be. So.
Well, where you did make your mark in the FA Cup was the 9th of March in an FA Cup quarter-final against Ipswich. 1985. So Goodison saw one of the most outrageous pieces of skill ever, which I hope people still remind you of. So you get a free kick early in the game. Just take the story from there.
It was about 22 yards out, more or less centre of the goal. And I always used to try and get on the ball early to take a quick free kick, try and gain an advantage. Mm. And the wall was Ipswich wall. Paul Cooper was still setting it up. So I've just bent it over the ball into Paul Cooper's top right-hand corner. Referee disallowed it because the wall wasn't ready and Paul Cooper. So it was a bit of mind games then.
So your immediate reaction is what? Do you shout at the ref or are you quite a calm guy on the pitch?
No, I was expecting it, to be honest, because I put the ball down again and the wall was only about 8 yards, so I moved the ball backwards to get another yard sort of thing. So, and Peter Reid said to me, what are we going to do now? Well, Peter's only scored one goal in his career. We're on radio, so I can't really say exactly what I said to him, but I just told him to get out the way. And I said, I'll put it in his other corner. And Paul Cooper, knowing that I could put it in his top right-hand corner, he's just edged slightly to his right, which left a little bit more of a gap down to his left. So I knew if I could get it up and down off the ball and just a bit of spin away from the keeper, it had every chance of going in. So fortunately, I was able to execute it right. And as you mentioned before, Steve, it's a memory that most Evertonians remind me when I see them. They always say about the twice taken goal. So it's always great when you finish to look back and you've left like a nice memory for the supporters.
It's even better that you told Peter Reid you were going to do it as well. Like an utter confidence. Was it something you practiced relentlessly in training?
Indeed, yes. I mean, every day I practice, you know, because if you're at Goodison Park and there's 40,000 people shouting your name, the expectation is high. So you've got to make sure that you're in the best possible position to be able to produce. So yeah, I practiced and practiced. I mean, looking at played for Ireland against Spain, and Maradona was playing for Seville at the time. Mm. And we finished training and we were getting ready to go on the coach, and he came out and he was with the 6'5" goalkeeper, and he was just practicing his free kicks, just putting them in both corners. And you're looking, well, if he's practicing them, everybody needs to be practicing them. So practice doesn't make perfect.
Were you a student of the game then? You looked at people like Maradona and thought, right, this is what I need to do to be at a certain level.
Indeed, when he played for Napoli, I used to video all the games and the goals he scored. I mean, in Italy, they were putting people on the post and he was still putting it in the top corner sort of thing. So I always used to, watch everything. So whatever I was going to be good at, I tried to make it as good as I could be.
You weren't a bad goal scorer. I think in one of your seasons, you get 17 goals from the wing. I think even now, if you look at a modern-day footballer, it's a remarkable tally, isn't it? What led you to those sort of figures and heights?
Well, it was always a battle I had with Howard because that season, that was 87 when we won the league. Reedy and Brace were injured, so there was myself and Alan Harper played in the middle. So I was able to get in from the left-hand side when I was playing wide left, but when you're playing in the middle, you can get into the box both sides sort of thing. Mm. So it gave me more opportunities from the left and from the right. So I had a knack of being in the right place at the right time, and it is a knack. It's not lucky. You try and read where the ball's going to bounce, or you try and read where the cross is going to go. And I was fortunate. I was a decent finisher. So once I got in there, then I was confident I could score.
You mentioned the arrival of Gary Lineker before. So he's brought in Andy Gray. He's moved out. So you're there at a time where there are certain sort of movements within the side of good players coming in, but also decent ones leaving the squad as well.
Yeah, I think with Gary came in for 86, and it was a total different type of game we had to play. Gary was electric pace. Mm. He'd put a ball over the defensive back four, and he'd get onto it, whether it was a good ball or not. He just had that electric pace. I think he scored 40 goals in that season. Sharp, he got about 26, but the rest of the team couldn't get forward quickly enough to support them, so I didn't score many. Trevor Stephen didn't score many. So we ended up finishing runners-up in the league and runners-up in the FA Cup. So when you look back to when we won the league in 85, we scored a lot more goals with more players being involved. So he was great for that season. And then he moved on to Barcelona.
You only narrowly lost the league. So in the final three matches of the season, the title was still in your hands. And yet you lose a game to what could be described as lowly Oxford, don't you? Yeah. Do you look back on that with a certain degree of disappointment?
Indeed. I mean, when you come so close, and it was, I mean, Oxford were a tough team at home. They had a big slope on the pitch. They had some real physical players. But on the day, you've got to deal with that. And certainly, it's probably looking back, that's where we lost it.
Right, I'm going to put you on the spot here. The greatest Everton team that you've played in. Take me through it.
Okay, it's got to be Nev, Gary Stevens. Great athlete, could get up and down, had quality, could score goals, could create goals. Kevin Ratcliffe, Derek Mountfield for the goals he scored. Bales probably won't like me. It's a toss-up between John Bailey and Pat Vandenhout, but I have to go with Pat. Trevor Stephen, Reedy, Paul Bracewell. Can I put myself in it?
Of course you can, Kev.
I'll put myself on the left end.
You have to put yourself in your team, don't you?
And Sharpie and Adrian Heath. And then obviously the other players.
There's a few you haven't mentioned there as well, isn't there?
Yeah, that was the team that when that was firing, and that was a great side.
Who was your roommate? Who were you closest to within your Everton life?
Kevin Ratcliffe. A room with him. I was there just short of 10 years, so most of the time I roomed with him. So we had good laughs and all that. I had the choice of playing for Wales or for Ireland. Mm. When Ireland qualified for the European Championships, I went to every travel agent and got every German travel book I could to put on his spec. And the same in 1990 in Italy. Got every brochure I could on Italy, because they were just missing out on qualifying. He had a great team, Wales. So Rats was my roommate.
You've got immortality with the Republic of Ireland, haven't you? For a certain goal against England.
It is. It's nice. I was over about a month ago. We had a reunion for the 1988-1990. And, you know, it's great to meet up with the lads who have not seen for quite a while. We talk the same stories and have a good laugh sort of thing. But it's a piece of history.
And what is the main story? So you score an equaliser against England, don't you? In the group stages.
Yeah. So it's as I say, Ireland's first ever goal in the World Cup. So that's a piece of history I'll always have. Helped us to, we got out of the group, and then we played Romania. We drew 0-0. We won on a penalty shootout, and then we get through to against Italy in Rome, as I mentioned before. We were playing against 12 men that night. They had the referee well and truly on board. So it was a tight game, and the one chance really that fell in the game fell to Toto Scarlatti, and he was on fire for that tournament, and he's just buried it. So we come close. Argentina beat Italy in the semi-final, and West Germany went on to beat it. And Jack Charlton said after the game, he said, "You won't know how close you've come to getting to a World Cup final." You know, when you look back at Argentina, they still had Maradona, but they were an aging team then, and so it was great. I mean, we probably did better than most people thought. But when you look back, it was agonisingly close.
Now, he was a character, wasn't he, Jack? What were his man management skills? How did he manage to generate such a feeling of positivity within the Republic squad?
He was just a one-off. I remember we played Wales in a friendly at Lansdowne Road, and he read the team out from a cigarette packet. So he had... naming the team, he said Jeremy Charles, and he's like, who does he play for? And we went Swansea. He said, well, he can't be much good. And then he was saying Alan Malcolm, and we're like, Jack, it's Malcolm Allen. Well, he can't, you know. So I think he was, whether he was ahead of his time. Anyway, we went 2-0. So I don't know whether he was working at sort of saying they weren't great. But no, he was exactly what Ireland needed at the time. We had some great players. Liam Brady, world-class player. But Jack wanted a more, they call it long ball game. And I've always said, it's when you play Wimbledon, yes, it's a long ball because the quality's not the same. But when you've got like a left foot like Steve Staunton delivering balls into channels, Dennis Irwin, Chris Hughton, it's balls with quality. And we had all the players at that time were playing for the top teams. Mm. So we were used to playing in big games. We were used to playing in European games. So when it came to the international stage, we were fearless because we had a good team. And we pressed teams in their half, which never was unheard of in international football. Usually when you lose the ball, you drop off and let them have the ball. But we were closing them down. So I think Jack was a little bit ahead of his time in that respect. And we got a lot of success.
That's brilliant. You had that sort of charisma that maybe Bobby Robson had as well. And managers are very different nowadays, aren't they?
Indeed, yeah. I mean, it was Jack's way of the highway. I mean, if you didn't do it the way Jack wanted, then he'd get somebody else, and he was no messing with Jack. Mm. He talked to you straight, which I think the players responded to. They all loved him. And, you know, as I say, it was going from Everton, playing for Ireland, it was exactly the same. You know, a great manager, a great man manager, and, you know, believed in his players.
How hard is it to leave Everton when it all finishes as a player?
Really difficult when you've had the memories that I've had there. But I was...
Do you feel you had the best of everything?
Yeah, it was time to go. I mean, I could have stayed. I could have had a testimonial, but money's not always been my god. I had the opportunity to go to Newcastle. I wasn't playing regularly for Everton, and I if I'm not playing, then you don't want me sort of thing. Like, yeah. I need to play. I'm no good on the bench. I want to be out there playing. So it got to the stage where I had a chat with Howard, and we felt it was best for both parties. And he said, Newcastle have come in for me. Kevin Keegan had just taken over. And I knew from playing at St. James's Park, the passion of the supporters. And it was going from one great set of supporters to another. So it was quite easy. I signed for them in the March. Ozzie Ardiles had just been... I'd just left there. Keegan had just taken over, and we were in a relegation battle, and we stayed up at the last game of the season against Leicester. And then the next season, Keegan signed Andy Cole, brought some other players in. We won the first 10 games and went on to win the, if I forget all of these now, the first division championship. It was the season after the Premiership started. So I'd won another medal up there with Newcastle. So, you know, looking back, it was a good move for me at the time, but devastated to have had to leave Everton.
When the playing days finished, of course, you've had a pretty memorable journey on the coaching and the management path as well, whether it be Tranmere or being involved back at Everton once again. So you got a call to come back to Everton and be involved with some of the youngsters.
I never close any doors. It's an option. I would have been fortunate. I finished playing at Blackpool. Then I was a youth coach at Blackburn Rovers. I coached the A team there. There was Shea Given was in goal. Damien Duff, James Beattie, Jamie Johnson, David Dunn. There was like a real good team. Then Aldo got the manager's job at Tranmere. So
that was a ride.
That was a real roller coaster ride. We had some fantastic, particularly in the cups. You know,
do you look back at those cup games, whether it be your West Hams, your Middlesbroughs, your Sunderlands, where you had the wrong number of players on the pitch? Yeah. There was all sorts going on, wasn't
it?
It was
brilliant because it was like, it was a fortress, Prenton Park, and nobody liked going there. We had Dave Chandler with the long throw, and it was just, we got to the quarter final with the FA Cup twice. Liverpool beat us 3-2, Newcastle beat us 1-0, Shearer scored, and then getting to the Worthington Cup final, I think it was 2001,
against Leicester.
Against Leicester, yeah. They beat us 2-1.
2-1, yeah.
David Kelly scored. So now, just looking back, you know, it was we weren't able to keep hold of the better players, you know, so we're always sort of in the league, we're always struggling a little bit, but for some reason the players could just raise themselves. Like Andy Parkinson scored a wonder goal against Middlesbrough, run half the length of the pitch. So we had some great memories, and you know, I wouldn't change us from fantastic times.
How much would you love the next generation of Everton fans to experience what you've been through?
I talk to a lot of supporters, you know, and this with their sons and all that, and they can only tell them, they can only see it on the. Well, I was going to say DVDs, but it's the VHS.
Yeah, they've gone out of fashion now, haven't they?
So, but no, I mean it's. I'm sure our time will come again. It goes in cycles in football. I mean, Man City, if you looked at them years ago when they were relegated, you know, to where they've come now. I know it's a money game now, but you know, we've got a good chairman who's invested a lot of money. So I think the signs have been good recently. I mean, I've enjoyed watching the football. We've got a certain style to us now. I think with the addition of a couple more possibly attacking players, and I think you know, we could look, we've got to the top six place, so I think with a few more additions, you know, and Gomez is excellent, he runs the game for us in midfield, you know, so we've got a good centre backs, the keepers, Pickford's good keeper, so we've got the nucleus of a good team, and I'm sure hopefully in the January window we can make some more additions.
Kev Sheedy, absolute delight to have you in for Match of My Life. Dave Downey, our Evertonian friend's in the studio. I asked him before you came in, I said, where do you place Kev in the list of all-time Everton greats? He said he's definitely in the top five. You're far too humble and modest to actually say anything like that about yourself, but you've played with some wonderful players and you've been an incredible journey, haven't you?
It is. I've been so fortunate to be in that era of that time. That team, you know, the fantastic memories on and off the pitch, the memories we've given to the supporters, you know, so it's something that's, you know, as I say, really, it's only when you look back at your career that you don't appreciate it at the time, but you're just moving on to the next game. So when you win the Cup Winners' Cup, we've got a cup final on the Saturday, so you haven't really got time to enjoy that success because you're moving on to another trophy, and it was like that in the early 80s for us. So just a privilege to have been part of that.
Kev Sheedy's Match of My Life, absolutely superb. If you can help out with Kev's fundraising initiative for bowel cancer, you'll find plenty of details online or through the social media. Just Giving have a page as well, Kevin Sheedy, on there. So raising money for bowel cancer, very important cause.
Thank you, Kev. Great to see you.
Radio City Talk.
Match of My Life. Sport's greatest moments.